Welcome to an all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. It is semifinal Saturday, and wow. We had to even take a little cool-down time from the insanity of the end of Dayton St. Louis. But as always, I'm Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. We're going to talk about that game with Riley Frayne of Mid-Major Madness. Riley, thank you for joining.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for having me. Always, I know we missed out last year because I didn't make the trip down to D.C., but always fun making sort of this annual A-10 tournament appearance on the pod with you guys.
Yeah, and we're thinking we probably don't need you for St. Joe's. So it's halftime. That's looking ugly. If things turn around, wow, is this going to be a hell of a day? But probably not. We'll talk about that game later and preview the championship, but I don't even know where to start. I guess we almost have to just recap that final sequence there. Jacob Connor, the much maligned Jacob Connor, hits the three to put Dayton back in the lead. St. Louis doesn't call timeout because I'm assuming that they all just instinctively knew that Robbie Avila was just going to go for that trail three, the same exact shot he hit to beat George Washington, a shot that you know is going in every single time. Dayton rushes back down. Jordan Durkak, who shot 15 free throws in this game, tried his darndest to get himself back to the line again, ends up just kind of recklessly tossing the ball up. Amael Letong tips it in. Deshaun Montgomery doesn't get teed up for running on the court. And Dayton means that the A-10 is officially now a multi-bid league. But Riley, I don't know, just take it from there.
I mean, that has to be the greatest 13 to 15 seconds of Atlantic 10 tournament basketball we've seen in the past couple of years. Certainly the best I've covered in person. I mean, well, I think the big thing, of course, Jacob Connor, a little used Jacob Connor in this game, hitting the big shot that the Dayton native, if I'm not mistaken. And I mean, you mentioned it, Tyler. Robbie Avila going down the other floor. He might have been 0 for 6 from 3, but, you know, it felt like the whole arena here knew he was going to hit that trailing 3. Of course, it's been sort of something he's kept in the bag all throughout the year and done a couple times here and there. You could tell the way Jordan Durkak ran down the floor. I mean, it's tough for him not to be confident in his ability to get to the line the way he did with ease today. And obviously he finishes with 28 points. But, you know, I think a lot of the credit should go to Amael Letong for the way he followed up the play. I mean, a guy who's been playing really well to close out the regular season and in the A-10 tournament here. Just a lot of credit to Amael Letong for the way he sort of trailed the play. I mean, that has to be one of the craziest finishes I've ever covered that we've seen here this week at the A-10 tournament for sure.
Yeah, I think for Amael Letong, huge credit to him staying in the game. He didn't really have an effective first half, but comes one rebound and one assist away from a triple nickel, putting up 7 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Also played 37 minutes, and that was one of the key things for Dayton. The last about 12, 13 minutes of this game, the Flyers made very few lineup substitutions. It was really just two starters, Javon Bennett, Letong, out there on the court with three bench players, Jordan Durkak, Bryce Hurd, and Jacob Connor. Anthony Grant really showed a lot of confidence in those guys. They were the ones out there for the bulk of St. Louis's long 10-plus minute field goal drought. And he really didn't want to move away from that lineup, which, credit to the Flyers, it worked and got them a lead late in the game.
Yeah, and I do have the numbers on that. 13 minutes, 49 seconds to go. He puts Jacob Connor and Bryce Hurd in the game, two guys who had been falling out of the rotation. They were down 10 at that point, technically 11, but Javon Bennett made a free throw after they came in. That should count to the previous lineup, even though it doesn't. Those guys stayed in until Keontae Jones got back in the game in the final minute. He just rode that lineup over and over again. And for good reason. During that stretch, there was a 10-minute run where St. Louis didn't make a field goal. Not the lineup you would have expected to be a shutdown defensive group with no Montgomery, no Keontae Jones out there. But yeah, I mean, that was the group that got hot. And I guess this was an instance of just not wanting to change what was working.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing for me too is, I mean, so The big thing, Keyonta Jones coming back in. He hits a couple clutch free throws late to keep Dayton within range too. I think that's something worth pointing out. But yeah, I mean, the way they continued to ride, of course, Jordan Dirkek's hot wave and Javon Bennett always doing what Javon Bennett does and sort of controlling the tempo and pace. But you know, not putting Deshane Montgomery really back out there too much in the second half. The way they sort of Bryce Hurd playing through a little bit of foul trouble, and you know, he was big on the boards. Of course, Jacob Connor and he came clutch through late in the. You know, late in this game hand Dayton the lead before Robbie Avila went down the other floor to take it back. And, you know, we went over the last 13 seconds. But I think just one thing I wanted to point out that's really caught my attention, because I know the story of this game is going to come down to the last 13, 15 seconds, that exchange. And maybe based on what we've seen on Twitter, sort of Deshane Montgomery not getting called for that technical. But like St. Louis's offense was so streaky in this game. They had 18 turnovers. I mean, that's massive. That has to be, you know, their highest single game total this season, I would guess. And it made their offense streaky at points. You know, it felt like they get that. I mean, it's an easy thing to say. They get that turnover margin a lot lower. And it felt like there were stretches where St. Louis absolutely could have run away with this game. I mean, you said it, Tyler. You know, there were certainly stretches where St. Louis's offense went a little streaky. I'm imagining the turnover numbers played into that a lot. You wouldn't necessarily think it based on their shooting percentages, because they were, you know, a good bit better than Dayton, who shot 27% from the field in the second half and sort of needed those turnovers to keep this game within range. So for me, I know Shirts in the locker room, those guys, they're probably kicking themselves over 18 turnovers. You know, definitely something they're going to want to adjust and discuss and talk about, you know, heading into hopefully the the NCAA tournament in a couple of weeks with an at-large bid.
Yeah, they've had 18 a couple times. It looks like their season high of 20
Okay.
against Lindenwood in the second week of the year. Probably one of those games where everyone was playing like 16 minutes and they were just shuttling guys in and out. But I mean, we do have to go back to Dirkhack, who this is going to be remembered as the Jordan Dirkhack game. 28 points after he was probably their best player the day before against Bonaventure. He's clearly the leader in the race for A10 tournament player of the tournament, I guess. That was very poorly said, but yeah, he's been the best player in the league these last 4 days here. Career high four made threes here. He's 6 of 10 from deep against St. Louis this year. That was one of only two other games this year where he made multiple threes. So yeah, and that second half, he started to realize that the whistles were going to come. We tweeted out he drew three different fouls inside the opponent's free throw line, that all of which were in the bonus. He ends up getting to the line while standing on the out of bounds line on the opposite end of the court at one point.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not talk about what Jordan Dirkhack has been doing, not only today, but I mean, you know, well, you mentioned it just throughout the course of the A10 tournament, particularly with, I mean, he sort of struggled a little bit throughout the regular season at different points, sort of figuring out his role within this Dayton team, you know, coming from Rutgers last year, where his role was incredibly, you know, regressed after his time at Merrimack. Of course, you know, Jordan Dirkhack, something of a Merrimack legend, I like to say. But yeah, the way he continued to get to the line, I mean, he single-handedly got to the line almost as much as St. Louis did, which undoubtedly is a huge factor in this game. And not only that, but I mean, hit some big timely buckets late in the game. You know, I know, I think he'll sort of be, we I like that we're calling it the Jordan Dirkhack game. I can't agree. Unfortunately, I think it'll be a little bit remembered for him rushing down the court and maybe chucking up an untimely shot that sort of required Emil Letang to come in and save the day a little bit. But yeah, hard to ignore what he's been doing today, what he did yesterday, hopefully what he'll go on to do in the championship tomorrow. And, you know, another good performance, like you said, Tyler, certainly is going to put him in that conversation for, you know, A10 tournament player of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, right now he's got 22 made free throws through his first two games of the A10 tournament. If he has another big game in the championship, we might need to look if he can set some sort of free throw record in this conference, because it has just been ridiculous. But one other thing I just wanted to highlight in this game that I found interesting, going back to the beginning, St. Louis took a double-digit lead very quickly in this game, almost within the first 5 minutes. And other than senior night against Loyola Chicago last week, the Billikens have really struggled in the first halves of games. They've spotted teams, huge leads. They did it in the first or in their first game in the quarterfinal against GW and managed a comeback. And they've done it a few other times in the regular season. I think that is one positive sign you take away for the Billikens going in to March Madness, is maybe they can take some confidence from having a good start to a game, showing that they can get out to a lead.
Yeah, I mean, this you kind of hit one of my key points here. Just this team that fails to make a nice start basically in any game since the month of January. They were 3 of 4 from three to start the game, and then they hit their first two to start the second half. What after Dayton had had that really nice close to the first, and it felt like they were just going to run away both times, really similar to both of the regular season matchups that were over by the under 12 time out, really, both in Chaffetz and UD Arena. But I do want us to make sure we mention the Dayton backcourt because Javon Bennett's performance is going to get lost here. He had 14 points in the second half. He, like Durkac, really just taking advantage of a heavy amount of whistles. And Deshae Montgomery was Dayton's best player the first 25 minutes of this game. He was really the only one who was finding his way to the basket. He missed a ton of layups, but was the only one who really kind of had any bit of aggressiveness and burst. He ended up leading the team in rebounding despite not playing that last 14 and a half. And then in perfect Deshae Montgomery fashion, he plays a good game, can't get back in because they're hot and they probably don't want him to go out there and make a mistake, and almost ruined the entire season running onto the court there at the end.
Still somehow managed to almost make a mistake that would have been a huge technical and would have cost, Dayton a shot here at winning this game, because putting St. Louis on the line with a chance to make two free throws, I like their odds at least hitting one of them. So yeah, I know, based on sort of the comments I've been receiving on Twitter, from sort of that last 13 seconds video that I posted, it seems like a lot of people think it probably should have been worthy of a technical. And I think there's going to be a conversation about maybe whether the ref should have had a look at it. I don't even know the rulings 100% if that was possible at the time based on the situation. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I'd like to think of it as the Jordan Durkac game, but I think, if you're a St. Louis fan, you sort of look at it at the non-technical call game, just based on the way it sort of played out, which is a shame because it was a really fantastic game, a lot of back and forth, a fun start, as you mentioned, to both halves, Tyler. And yeah, I mean, just kind of a shame. It's going to come down to a controversy like that a little bit.
Well, I mean, Riley, can we call it fair here? The 50-50 of whether or not Montgomery should have gotten the technical as the refs are starting to walk over the scorer's table. That's the same amount of points as that layup that Dayton was going to get
Sure.
that was stopped by the inadvertent whistle. So
That's
that's 2 points each way. I think it evens out.
Yeah, listen, I hope the conference doesn't find me, but I think there's been a number of games A10 tournament where the officiating's maybe been a little questionable. That's certainly not the first example. But I think a lot of coaches would tell you if you're, basing sort of your win-loss totals on the decisions of the officials, you've probably got bigger problems because you kind of just got to play with the whistle and the way the game's trending and different things like that. So tough. I never like to sort of stake a game's claim on one specific call or one missed call for that fact, because again, this was a really good game, some good shooting, some great offensive performances on both sides. And like with the calls, it probably could have gone either way. I'm sure if we really go back and we looked into it, there were more missed calls that, could have gone either way. But just I'd like to remember it as a fun back and forth game where Jordan Durkac had a great performance and Amola Tong came up huge late.
Given that Drew Joyce has not been fined for his presser after their loss to VCU, I think you're probably good.
I hope so.
My final point that I just want to toss in here, Amari Mukachu, who got semi-benched in the quarterfinal, came roaring back. He was awesome to start the games, ends up with a 16-point triple nickel. Now, he, like Montgomery, also had some ridiculousness and nonsense to his game. He turned the ball over 7 times. I think that's the big reason why he was not in the game offensively there for some of those final possessions, but that's just a big thing for them going into the NCAA tournament, that McCautry does feel like he has revived himself here after a really rough February. And we're going to see both of these teams play at least one more basketball game this season. We haven't been able to say that yet in this tournament, but any other final points from either of you two?
No, I mean, I would have touched on Amari Mukachu and his hot start there, but you got right to it, Tyler. Just again, a fun back and forth game. An impressive performance from Jordan Durkac. We'll have to look into, as Matt said, maybe that's a tournament record for free throws he's putting together over the past couple of days, particularly if he puts in a good performance tomorrow. But excited to see who they face in the championship. It's looking like VCU. So, another good marquee matchup against two of the conference's premier programs with a chance to get this league back to three bids is, what more could you ask for in March? It's there's not a better time for sports, maybe, throughout the entire year. Certainly not for college, for basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a great point, Riley. This might be the best chance we have for three bids since Tyler and I started this podcast for the 20, what, 18 season. And
19.
yeah, it is pretty incredible. But I think for Dayton, this is probably the Flyers' biggest win in the A-10 tournament since they cut down the nets at UD Arena in 2003. And it does look like at this time they will play VCU. Maybe we'll have to edit this out if the Hawks make a huge comeback, but just kind of interesting because that is who the Flyers ended up facing their last two trips to the championship in 2015 and 2022, and or 2023, excuse me. And neither went Dayton's way in that case, but with the Flyers' momentum, they have won all of their recent games with the exception of VCU on senior night last week, and you know they would want revenge.
Yep. And that's the biggest point out of all this. St. Louis is officially an at-large team. They will not be taking the A-10 tournament championship. And that means no matter what, we're going to have at least two games to preview this week. So a little bit of extra fun here on the three bid league. But regardless, Riley Frayne, thank you for joining us. Where can the good people find you?
Absolutely, guys. Always my pleasure. Love the coverage you guys are doing here at 3-Bit League. Always one of my favorite pods to follow in the rotation. But yeah, for those listening, you can check out some of my stuff on Twitter at Riley Frayne, RileyFrayn. I work for Mid-Major Madness, which is where I do most of my reporting. So a lot of mid-major focused college basketball coverage. Of course, a ton of A-10 stuff too. So definitely come check it out if you get the chance. But yeah, just again, thank you so much for having me, Tyler and Matt. Always a pleasure, guys.
All right, for our second semifinal wrap-up here, I'm joined by Adam Epstein from 910 The Fan in Richmond. AWOD, thank you for hopping on.
Yeah, man. So happy about that win. Just felt so good to beat St. Joe's and I guess to shut up all the haters that said that VCU needed to win that game to get in.
Who knows? I mean, it seems like the committee might have made the bracket this morning already. We could go 20 minutes on, well, if VCU loses, does Dayton then get their spot? I guess at this point, it doesn't matter much because you just win on Sunday and the Rams will be dancing. But just an absolute, honestly, butt-kicking blowout, however you want to describe this game. VCU seemed to be in control about 5 minutes into this game, never looked back. Jadrian Tracy was awesome in this one, 6 for 11 from the field, 15 points, which is kind of fun because the ex-Hawk really struggled in the regular season matchup. He finally got to have himself a nice performance against his old team.
Yeah, I mean, he really does work hard, and you could see it's the same shots he shoots every game. They were just falling today, and he's the veteran in this group. He's the guy with the most experience, and I thought he needed to have a big game for VCU to win. He did, but really, it was just all about that run in the first half that separated the two teams.
Yeah, first game between St. Joe's and VCU on Martin Luther King Day. Pretty close fight with St. Joe's losing only by 7 at the Siegel Center, kind of sparked their second half turnaround of the season. This game much different. What was your biggest takeaway that led to a pretty comfortable VCU win?
The defense and the ability to run St. Joe's off the 3-point line. I felt like the game that VCU played against St. Joe's in January, Simpson Toscano got a bunch of open threes, and
Simpson was amazing that game.
he hit a bunch of them. So today it was just like every time the Hawks looked like they were going to get an open three, VCU closed out so well and kind of really did run them off the 3-point line. I mean, they had one bank in earlier. They just weren't getting any clean looks from the outside.
Yeah, I mean, the 21-point first half. Now, a small part of that is St. Joe's got some open shots that they were just bricking. Dasir Haskins started 0 for 8. I think we kind of summed up the game. VCU's on a 19-3 run early on, and Kefik Meyers misses two free throws. Like, as great as VCU played, and it was an excellent performance by them, it also just kind of wasn't St. Joe's day, and Simpson got held to 7 points. Really, the only guy who you could say outplayed their standard today was Austin Willeford, and most of that came in the second half once it was already out of reach.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're so right with that. And then you look at VCU, like every single guy that needed to have a good game had one. Tracy, Djokovic, Hill, that's your big three. And then Michael Bell won't get the credit because he didn't get the points. But I noticed in the first half, he was plus 20 when he was in the game. I mean, Michael Bell just made every difference on the defensive end and his rebounds as well.
Yeah, and Terrence Hill, I mean, a really quiet 18 points. Like, I didn't, the whole reason I didn't lead the show with him, even though he probably was VCU's best player, is I'm watching the game and nothing Terrence Hill does is ever quiet. Like, he could have 7 points and you think he'd have 18. This was weirdly the opposite, where he was super efficient. And I just kind of don't remember him playing this well as I run the game back through in my mind.
He was taking what the defense gave him, and they were kind of riding his back as he went to the basket. You saw him kind of just pull up from mid-range, a couple fadeaways, a couple of runners. And, you know, this is a guy that usually is shooting 5 to 8 threes a game, and he was just going to the basket. And so I thought the mid-range game from Terrence Hill showed you, hey, he's a lot more than just a three-point shooter and a guy that can drive to the basket. I mean, when you can hit tough fadeaways like that, you're a three-level scorer. It makes you so hard to defend.
Yeah, and with the championship game coming up tomorrow, Hill's been the leading scorer in both of VCU's games. We've already spent a lot of time talking about Jordan Durkak's first two games of the A-10 tournament. But, you know, depending on which of those guys really shows up and leads their team to a victory, we could very well be looking at one of the most outstanding players of the tournament who could take home that award.
Yeah, tomorrow's going to be really interesting, especially given the coaching matchup, Grant's familiarity with VCU, and of course with Martelli, he just knows all about the A-10.
Yeah, the only other thing I want to note here with this game, the one negative for VCU, it's just been a pretty meh 2 days here for Lazar Djokovic, so something to kind of monitor in that title game. 13 points in each, only 5 combined rebounds. He was not a significant factor.
When you have
so.
Game-changing dunks like that, you don't really need to do much else. I mean, that got the crowd into it, got everybody excited. Just massive plays there in the second half.
What are we missing from this recap? Kind of any other big takeaway note that you had that we haven't touched on?
Yeah, for me, it was Ahmad Noel. Not really his performance, but the playing time he got. And I really think the team loved that. Like, the chemistry was on fire today, as, you know, he didn't get to play yesterday, right? And everybody that doesn't get to play is thinking about their opportunity, their moment, if they can get in. And that was for him today. And then later you get Jordan Dumont and Jordan Tillery into the game. And I just think the team chemistry right now for VCU is peaking. Like, we've talked about, they haven't played a full 40 minutes the entire season. This was one of the closest they got to that, and it was still probably only a good 32 minutes, but it was an excellent 32 minutes. And so I think younger guys getting into the game, it just creates a great vibe and a great energy in that locker room.
So going into our finals preview here, it is Dayton VCU for the third time. VCU got the best of that in 2015 and then again in 2023. Things have completely changed since that matchup. Nobody left from that game, basically except for Anthony Grant and a couple of his assistant coaches. But 2-0 VCU this year, obviously, just an absolute beatdown in Richmond and an awesome game about a week ago. So how does Dayton turn the tide in this one, I think, is really the question. It felt like they gave their best performance in that game at UD Arena. It's going to be a little tough to come through after they couldn't pull that one out.
Yeah, I think Dayton, it's all about their ability to get layups on VCU, right? Because when VCU's defense is forcing Dayton to shoot deep shots and long twos, you're forcing them into a lower percentage. But Montgomery's ability to get to the basket, Bennett's ability to get to the basket, and then their ability to get to the free throw line is going to be something that'll be crucial tomorrow.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I think the free throw battle might be the most important factor. Dayton, over the last couple weeks, has become the number one free throw rate team in the nation. That's been a tremendous factor in the wins over St. Bonaventure and St. Louis. And on the other hand, you look at VCU today against St. Joe's, played really physical defense at the rim. St. Joe's was having trouble converting in the paint. And despite that, they only sent St. Joe's to the line 5 times. So I think that's one of the biggest keys. Can VCU play great defense against Dayton without fouling?
No, absolutely. And you look at, like, I've covered VCU for like 15 years now, right? Because I went to school in 2011. When they defend without fouling, that's how they win games. When they can play the havoc in your face defense, force turnovers, and not send the opposition to the free throw line, that's VCU basketball. That's their winning recipe. It's all up in your face defensively, the havoc, forcing turnovers. And like you said, just walling up at the rim, just jump straight up. And that is something, you know, coach has talked about. We kind of had a funny moment in my interview with him last week. He doesn't like the charge call. So when it's a 2-on-1, he's teaching his guys to wall up, to create a deflection, not to just stand there still. And I think you saw that today when the opposition ran towards the basket.
Yeah, the one big difference from that last game, obviously, Amaiola Tong took that early foul trouble, and Dayton was terrible when he was off the court. And simply put, the whole reason it was close is because they were outplaying VCU in those Letong minutes. So we'll see what happens with that. The one thing I'm thinking of, just honestly from kind of a fun standpoint, even beyond the matchup of the game, but this awesome VCU transition offense going up against this Dayton team that has now reached a new level of takeaways in transition. Bennett, Montgomery, Jones, just finding ways to pick off passes, shut down 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s. We'll see if VCU can avoid the mistakes that St. Louis and St. Bonaventure made in those spots.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've talked about fast break points throughout the season on the pregame show being something that VCU should win. That's it, like that and rebounding. Use their athletic ability, the way they create turnovers. But it's all about live ball turnovers, as you guys know, especially tomorrow on Championship Sunday. Can they get a turnover and go the other way? And then, like you said, like 3-on-2 fast breaks. I mean, Bennett today was terrific at stopping those. And so it's just all about, you know, going strong at the basket, not hesitating, but also not being reckless and being under control. And hey, if they do match you 2-on-2 back there, maybe you just pull it back out and run your offense.
Yeah, I think the pace of the game is going to be really important. Obviously, VCU, one of the most up-tempo teams in the conference, Dayton trying to slow them down. In the first matchup, VCU definitely played at their pace. Second game last week, Dayton actually, I thought, controlled the tempo pretty well. It was one of VCU's slower games of the season, but the Flyers just did not shoot the ball well enough to take advantage of that. So I would definitely say, as it comes down to a lot in Dayton VCU matchups, whoever really controls the tempo and the flavor of the game is going to have an advantage.
Yeah, I also look at the power forward position. So Michael Bell's been so good these last two games. Barry Evans hasn't been as good, but against Dayton, Barry Evans was probably like the VCU MVP. He hit three pointers. I think he was 3 of 5 from the outside. He was getting rebounds. He was attacking the basket. He's a guy that can get offensive rebounds and points in the paint, and he's yet to play his best basketball. So that might be a guy that I'd look at as a big X factor for VCU tomorrow.
Anything else that we need to add on to this preview? I mean, this is a matchup we've obviously seen two times well in depth. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of surprises there, but we do have the history here. Dayton obviously still have not won an A-10 final held on a neutral court. VCU with that kind of shockingly bad A-10 championship game record, and including being 0-1 in this building, losing to Rhode Island 8 years or 9 years ago at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you play in a lot of championship games, that's what you want. We certainly have taken our fair share of losses. And I just, you know, I think that there is some kind of a positive vibe for VCU, given the fact that, hey, you're not playing St. Louis, who beat you twice. Like that was the matchup I was most scared of. And I can't believe the way Dayton won that game. I wonder if they blew all their emotions at the end of that one, if that kind of gets into their psyche. Playing tomorrow. And also, you know, Dayton's going to play, I think, with an extra bit of nerves knowing their season's on the line. I'm not sure VCU will play that way.
I think another just kind of interesting wrinkle, looking back at the history of the A-10 and VCU in the A-10 tournament, the Rams have been in a lot of these championship games, but it's been a really long time since we've seen back-to-back tournament champions, with the last one being Temple in 2009 and 2010. So the Rams have a chance to make some history. A couple key guys from last year's roster still on the team. And you just have to wonder, too, if that plays any role, given that, you know, the Rams have three key rotation players and starters that know what it's like to be in that game.
Yeah. And I look at Terrence Hill didn't play much last year. Brandon Jennings was more of a defensive guy last year. Michael Bell was a role player last year. But those guys have developed so much throughout the course of this season. And that's, I think that's been Coach Martelli Jr.'s secret sauce, has been team chemistry and player development. And throughout this season, you could close your eyes and point to anybody on the roster, and you'd see development, like Tyrell Ward, who earlier this season was not even getting onto the court for almost a month straight. Jadrian Tracy has improved, and he had such a great game today. So the player development and the team chemistry, I think, is the Martelli Jr. secret sauce. We'll see if that can lead to a victory.
Yeah, we will see. The one thing we know, this is going to be an awesome game. I mean, it's kind of hard to believe. Think back 6 weeks ago after Dayton and VCU played the first time, and it really felt like Dayton's season was over. It felt like Anthony Grant might get shown the door. The entire team was probably going to end up in the portal, and yet here we are, where it turns out they actually were the third best team in this league all along. And we'll see. Two of the big programs here going at it. Maybe we get two in, maybe we get three in. But the one thing we do know is that, Adam Epstein, you are going to continue to give us some great VCU Rams coverage. So where can all the good people find you?
Yep, absolutely. Sports Radio 910 The Fan, Monday through Friday from 12 to 3. You will hear me on VCU pregame and halftime tomorrow. I was actually doing the pregame show during the Dayton comeback. I mean, I got to go back and rewatch that. Like, how did they come all the way back there on the final stretch? Of course, the ending, and we could spend a whole podcast on if they should have gotten a technical or not. But the way they turned around that game was super impressive.
Yeah, we have agreed that St. Louis losing the 2 points from the technical is offset by Dayton losing the 2 points on the inadvertent whistle.
Yeah.
It evens out.
When was that? And that was like before the run, right?
It was right early on in the run. It was like 12 minutes left or something.
Dayton was up two at the time, but it was.
Oh, okay. So it was like 6 minutes left then. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Jordan Durkak was a foot away from the hoop with no defender in sight when they blew it. So, but thank you for joining us. And thank you to Riley Frayne for joining us as well. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to be diving into whichever team wins this. And then obviously, as the week goes on, we move on to NCAA tournament.
So long and 2W. We'll see you tomorrow.